Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, SportsZone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com, and I'm printing something important on the back of, I try to use paper, you know, both sides. And so now I'm going to want to go print something that I need to send, and I'm printing on the back of PPs. I can't send those. Gonna have to do that again. A quick note about yesterday, because I it's so funny to me. We never know what's going to come up here on the show. Amusingly, I put up the pictures of the Corvair and the Carmen Ghia. Did you have those on your bingo card today? And it got the greatest response. A bunch of people that's funny. The Carmen Ghia, a bunch of listeners said, me and my friends, we all wanted a Carmen Ghia. And our friend Leslie, she had friends that had, these kinds of antique cars. And I didn't even get a chance to follow it up with, you know, what I would like to have as a follow up. I had one antique car that I bought in St. Joseph, Missouri, when I was working at Proctor out of Kansas City. And one day in St. Joe, it was basically lunch. You can't call on restaurants during the lunch hour. And so I'm driving around St. Joe, and I think it was the first time I'd made calls in St. Joseph. And, you know, for those of you that know Western history, St. Joe, the headquarter depot of the Pony Express. So I had looked it up and got the address, and I wanted to go. You know, this is in the day when you had a box of road maps in your car. Those directories. You know, you'd have to really look up addresses in towns. You know, you were unfamiliar. Now, I mean, you got Waze, which is just fabulous. But back then, I literally had a Rubbermaid box of. I still have it. It's in the room. It's in the ante room downstairs. Literally a box of maps from, I'd say, 30 states, and from all the time selling on the road. But that day I went to St. Joseph. I wanted to go see the Pony Express office, so I kind of drive around, and I come around a square, and I see there's a used car lot, and the headlights are all pointing out, and as I'm driving by, a set of antique headlights and grill catches my eye, and I circle back, and I'm like, what is that? And turned out it was a 1959 Oldsmobile Dynamic 88. And when I was a kid, one of the first cars I kind of remember, I remember we had a Country Squire wagon, and my dad had a Mercury Comet pickup truck for work in the early 60s. But the first car I kind of remember was not a Dynamic 88, but a Delta 88 that my mother drove, dark blue. GI362 was the license plate. Now, I can't remember Tina's phone number, but I remember the license plate of my mother's car from 1964. right? Who's with me? Who's with me on this? For those of you that were salesmen, You used to be able to keep 200 phone numbers in your mind easily. Easily 200, 300 without looking them up. Your whole client base. Now, I kid you not, I have to literally stop and think, Tina's number. it's amazing what the handheld computer has done to all of us. But anyway, I was intrigued, and they wanted I think $3,200 for it. It had 30, if I'm not mistaken, I think it had 32,000 original miles on it. And got the whole backstory. It really ever had two owners. 1959 Oldsmobile Dynamic. It was gorgeous, white. I mean, the thing was an absolute aircraft carrier. And I was crazed. And I'd always thought about, that I'd like to have an antique car. But I was born in 59, so I thought, this is really cool. And so I went back. That was like a Wednesday or a Thursday, but I went back on Saturday and negotiated. I'm pretty sure I got it for $2,800. And I think I had like $400 or $500 to put down at the most. This has got to be 1984. So I was, 24 years old. And I financed you'll love this. I financed the balance with household finance, right? HFC? Household finance. It was like a red circle HFC. Household finance gave me the other whatever I needed. I think it was like $1,675. And you paid like, I don't know, you paid like $48 a month. One thing. And so I bought this antique car, and I just had so much fun with it for a long time. But eventually, actually, I gave it to my business partner in Montreal. I got it all the way to Montreal from Kansas City. Actually drove it from Kansas City to Charlotte for when Proctor moved me to Charlotte. And then Charlotte back to the Northeast, and then eventually, Northeast up to Montreal, and then I gave it to my business partner, Gaetan Lebel, when I left Canada. So the other car along these lines of that Corvair and Carmen Ghia we talked about yesterday, a Ford Falcon convertible. I love the style and it's that same era, the early 60s. And actually could have, I had a chance that I saw where there was one in Jefferson City once, red one with white interior that was fully renovated, reconditioned. But I already, at that point, I already had the olds. So the antique car conversation yesterday pops up, and a bunch of people really they loved it. It's a great hobby. I'm not great, fixing anything. I mean, I can change tires, and I can change oil, and do some basic things, but I can't, I couldn't recondition an antique car. You got to bring people in and the Bondo and whatever else. So anyway, I did want to circle to that because I got a big kick out of everybody's response yesterday, and who owned different ones, and really cool. So otherwise, a pretty eclectic Thursday in the offing. Joe Clancy is going to join us. I want to get Joe in, and I'm going to be gone all next week. So usually we take off Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, but taking the full week. So we got some things we got to look ahead to over the next couple of days. That'll include actually a visit. Kevin Kirstein is going to swing through this hour, and we'll look ahead to the big Stars of Tomorrow 2 card, and the stakes, as well as Clark and everything that is coming, Thanksgiving weekend. So we'll get a look at that. KK's got all the probables and or a lot of the probables as those fields come together. The Chalukyi on Saturday, and it's actually very good. It's got a nice late pick five. The cards on Saturday that I got a chance to look at, particularly Churchill and Aqueduct, continues to just have big, bulky fields, good racing. The Churchill pick five on Saturday is really good. The Grade 3 Chalukyi. This is a mile, the one turn mile. Obligatory, who is another horse that had at one time been considered for the Breeders' Cup Fillion Mare Sprint. She turns up in here. Phil D'Amato comes east with Ms. Bigley and more past the plate for Silverton Hill and Paul McGee. We'll see what, see what Marty thinks when we talk to him tomorrow. Ian Wilkes has got that Princess Causeway as well, who has mostly been on the turf, but is going to make a return to the dirt. And she sprinted to a pretty heady allowance win if you go back to last year on the dirt. So Princess Causeway intrigues in here. Sally's Curlin for Dale Rowitz. And is it me, or does it feel like Sally's Curlin has been around for 6 years? She's only a five-year-old, but it she's like one of those horses that she ran in the Chalukyi. It was last year or 2 years ago she ran in the Chalukyi. It just feels like she's been around forever, Sally's Curlin. It's a good group. Brad Cox has got Matera coming out of the Locust Grove. And Chris Block for the Lothenbox. How about the Lothenbox Homebred? She can't sing. So we'll talk to KK about the last couple of weekends here of Churchill. And then start to anticipate what should be a very interesting winter at Turfway. You got a very good maiden special that starts the pick five. These are fillies, two-year-old fillies going long on the main. Well, of course, on the main, there's no grass. And then the nightcap, our girls go in 7/8, both full fields, or pretty full. There's eight in the route race. Is that, yeah? There's eight in the route race, and there's I think 10 in the sprint. And for the most part, I think you got two horses making debuts, but the rest are coming in with experience and a couple of other allowances. So a very nice sequence at Churchill. I will talk about the actually, I might as well save the results from yesterday. Good job, by the way, speaking of yesterday, good job by Seth. That horse ended up going favored that he picked. That Kasserin Pass took money and ended up at 5-2, but won. So who cares? Paid $7. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. Good job by Seth. And had been 5-1 morning line, the Diodoro, for Mike Sisk, and won wire to wire. But we'll go over the rest of it with. Might as well save it for KK. Nice enough card today. And, of course, Aqueduct gets back onto your betting menu this afternoon, too. And nice group of races there. And there's the weather is beautiful. So turf, no problem. Got a couple of allowances. As part of the late pick four, pick five action. State Breds going 6 on the outer. And then you've also got one of my favorites. We'll have to handicap this spot. Mile and a 16th today. State Breds. Long on the grass. There is no more productive. We do have Chad in here, though. 7-2 as the favorite. That Grape Nuts Warrior. But always, so often, productive in terms of prices. And then I started handicapping in earnest this morning for the Friday card. We'll put up plays for tomorrow. It is unbelievable what a great card it is. And we'll have Nick Tamaro, too, to go through. Nikki DeVest, by the way, makes the return today. And Dave Grenick wrote about the return of Nikki DeVest. Comes in the third race. Speaking of New York, we'll talk to Pat McKenna. I mentioned yesterday, and I think you probably saw on Twitter, when asked about as I brought up with Seth just minutes ago, actually, if you're listening to the replay, the conversation about this prospective legislation that is being introduced. It of course is a farcical concept. There's not going to be any, as I wrote this morning, there's no superseding the agreement between the state of New York and the New York Racing Association. So this is a grandstanding attempt, and in a lot of ways, an attempt to whip up, anti-racing fervor, utilizing, the usual suspects of anti-racing interests, under the guise of doing good for the state. For the state's beleaguered taxpayers. There's only one problem with that. The state's taxpayers aren't being asked to contribute. People are going to Aqueduct to the Resorts World Casino and partaking in the gambling games. The typically disingenuous suggestions. Here's the press release. Countering decades of irresponsible waste and corporate welfare for horse racing, millionaires and billionaires. That's great. Why don't you tell the feed merchants and tell the van drivers and tell the small breeders throughout the state of New York, tell Larrey Visaggi and Joe McMahon about how they're being subsidized because they're billionaires. I mean, it's just so insulting. And if you've listened to frankly, over the 15, 16 years of the show, going back to the franchise debate and discussion, when I would rail about the way in which the media was portraying the discussions, the negotiations, the various elements of what went on 10 years ago. When I was absolutely incensed repeatedly about the inaccuracy of the reporting, reporting that in some cases was just, was just ignorant and lazy, but in many other cases was designed much like this to plant seeds in people's minds against the industry. And the perpetuating of those lies has a negative long-term effect. And that's why I used to have these discussions off air with like Andy and I would, and He said, nobody's paying attention, and you can't let it bother you. And I would say that's not true. This is you know, the proverbial death by a thousand cuts, because it you know, it's Chinese water torture. They just keep, you know, they just keep lying and keep, you know, my favorite, of course, is always the bailout. Oh, the $30 million bailout. No. In the legislation, there was a provision during the whole period of the franchise renewal that included the opportunity for the association to borrow against future income. That was a provision in a law. They borrowed that money, which ended up, I think, being in the $27 million range, and then paid it back. But yet, for years subsequently, the bullshit bailout term was used over and over and over and over. And you could say, the confusion, people didn't understand. That's the job of those that are doing the reporting, the accuracy, and to call the specifics, to report them and to, you know, elucidate them. And that's why it bothered me as much as it did, and why to this day I continue to bring it up, because it was a huge disservice and painted this you know, this cloud, and you know, tried to drive home this perception of, you know, NYRA and of racing interests in the state. And then you get, you know, this subsequent incursion or attempt. It'll go nowhere for just this reason, that the state, NYRA gave them the land, and the franchise was renewed, and there's mechanics here. And don't even get me started about the 10 years from 2000 to 2010, when the lottery division basically held the Aqueduct Casino hostage. They were trying the Four Corners, you know, clock stall to ruin the franchise so that Pataki interests could come in and basically steal the franchise. For those of you that remember listening to John Nehrud on these airwaves, and John told you 18 months, 2 years before things were finalized, that wasn't going to happen, and that there was only one outcome that was going to be possible, and which was NYRA gaining a renewal of the franchise. But there was 10 years where racing interest in the state could have been benefiting from the Aqueduct gaming parlor. 10 years. So concept, Pat McKenna will, if you didn't see Pat's quotes, which were terrific, and Nausea Thompson for the Breeders as well, laying out how wrongheaded and how insulting, actually, the whole suggestion is by the two legislators, Linda Rosenthal and Zellner Myri from downstate. So Pat will join us. And since Pat is going to be here, it's actually good timing. I was going to bring it up tomorrow with Dave Grenning, but Saturday night, at the arena. The Islanders. The Islanders introduce the UBS Belmont Park Arena, and it should be pretty cool on Saturday. I imagine we'll get the first look at the traffic at the traffic snarl, but Islanders management and Naira management all appropriately excited about what's going to happen Saturday night. There's also a concert tomorrow night, right? I think it's tomorrow night. Chicago is headlining a benefit at the arena. So we'll get Pat's thought about the interplay between Belmont and the arena. We'll check in with Rich Eng. I want to get Rich in before Thanksgiving today, and Tony Black. We got to get Tony with his pre-Thanksgiving visit. So Joe Clancy, Kevin Kirstein, Tony Black, Pat McKenna, Rich Eng, and did you think we weren't going to have celebrity chef Neil Kleinberg? You didn't think that Neil was going to make his Thanksgiving appearance? He's going to be here the last segment of the morning. Neil will join us, and we'll see what new thoughts he's got for next week, for Thursday, week from today. Wow, Thanksgiving, not one of our favorites, just our absolute favorite. Can't be beat. So Neil Kleinberg, late in the show. I you know, it's funny. Tina asked me last night or night before, I think, you doing anything different? And I tell you every year, the famous Thanksgiving advice, to try one new item, introduce one new item every year. The challenge in that, though, is if it hits, what do you suddenly your list of items has grown to another dish, and so you gotta be judicious about this. But in fact, who wrote me? Got a very nice email about this topic maybe a month ago regarding Clementine Paddleford, literally the godmother of Thanksgiving in this country, and her compendiums of American cooking. So I've been actually rifling. We're going to make a pumpkin pie, which I've never done. I've never made a pumpkin pie. And I'm only doing a pumpkin pie because of the success of the sweet potato pie. And I don't honestly know if we need both, if we need a sweet potato pie and the pumpkin pie. But I did do a test pie, and Tina gave it the thumbs up. I also learned something fascinating, and I can bring this up with Neil maybe. I don't know if you saw the piece. I want to say it was the food writer in the Times. You know the canned pumpkin. It isn't actually pumpkin. It's squash. The canning parameters of pumpkin, the legal definition, it can include any yellow, orange vegetable in the family. And so the actual pumpkin filling that you buy in the cans, it turns out is squash. So FYI, it doesn't, and it's been that way for years, apparently. Forever. But I guess there's people, right, that buy, you see the little signs, right? Pie pumpkins, you know, the little ones. I wouldn't do that I wouldn't cook one up like that. Even an acorn squash is no bargain to cook up like that either. Spaghetti squash now and then. And my mother used to occasionally make a squash soup. But I don't know. We're going to take a survey today. And in fact, Joe Clancy is the first to be asked. Joe, good morning. Did we lose?
Oh, there you are.
There's Joe.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Excellent. The Thanksgiving tradition around here, so you have to riff. You have to put your Thanksgiving ode into conversation here. Your favorite part of Thanksgiving, the Clancy family traditions, and your favorite pie. Give us your Thanksgiving treatise.
I love it. The Clancy family tradition seems to move around a lot, especially the older we get. So this year we're headed to my sister's in Rehoboth Beach, where my parents will be, which will be very cool. Some of my favorite memories, which are connected to racing, are a few years we ran horses at Laurel on Thanksgiving Day, where they would give free Thanksgiving dinner in a track kitchen. So I had some wonderful Thanksgiving dinners with Lonnie, Crazy Sam, and a few other racetrack grooms many years ago, which was memorable for sure.
What are the family favorites? Who makes what?
There's usually a lot of pie. Pumpkin pie, pecan pie, and the rest is pretty traditional. Brussels sprouts roasted Brussels sprouts have come into the fold here lately. And usually there's a big turkey somewhere in the middle of the table at somebody's house. We've done it the last few years, just as the kids got older, we've done it at several different places. So we move around a lot now, which is part of the fun, too.
I could see the Clancys maybe having like an alternate game bird, you know, maybe a little duckling or maybe a little pheasant or quail. Is that am I right?
Back when my mother's father, he was a big hunter, so yes, we would have a goose now and then, or
goose?
Probably not a pheasant. Goose and duck, I would think, would have made the table a few times. Yeah.
Well, you know, when we're going to talk to Neil Kleinberg, Clinton Street Baking Company, as we do every year, and we did a little bit of a pre-conversation, and duck came up because I'm seeing a lot of suggestion, and you know, it's very interesting. Essentially, this is the aftermath of last year's COVID Thanksgiving scenario where there was lots of individual things because, you know, they didn't, the, you know, the concerns over, you know, too much cross contamination, etc., and individual portions and this and that. And so the sense is that there's going to be some smaller gatherings again. And that means, you know, maybe a smaller centerpiece entree, and duck is getting a lot of play because of the little, you know, they're obviously a little smaller than a turkey, and they have all kinds of things going for them, including crisp skin and very juicy dark meat, and you know, there's a school of thought that says, you know, those are two of the biggest appeals of turkey.
Yeah, and obviously the turkey turns into a much bigger undertaking a lot of times. So if you don't have as big a dinner party, for sure, something smaller makes a lot of sense.
The you bring up the pies and you mention Laurel, and I did not hear or see anything. Is there a pie giveaway this year or not?
Yeah, I did. I saw something. So don't hold me to it if they don't have it. But I did see something come across my email that they were bringing back the pie giveaway and a dinner in the in the dining room type of thing, and turning it into a little bit of an event. So it sounds like the pie giveaway is coming back.
Outstanding. And I'm going to quickly do, you know, for those of you that are not aware of this, there has been, I mean, a historic giveaway at Laurel, and there, if I'm not mistaken, and I because it was, it's typical of Maryland that it isn't as simple as one might think. Pumpkin pie, mince meat.
Mince. Usually pumpkin and apple, right? Is that your choices?
There were used to be three choices. There was pumpkin, apple, and mincemeat.
Okay.
And what's interesting is that here we are in 2021, no one yet knows what mincemeat is. It's one of the great mysteries of food that it's been around forever. Everybody's heard it. No one knows what it is.
Don't ask me.
There you go. There you go. This is old. Let me see. This one goes, I can't tell if this is current or if it's, you know, you do a search on Laurel. It's hard. Okay. 4 days ago. Here we go. There it is. Here's the, typically I would reach out for Georgianne. Big Dreyfus would give us the details. Here we go. Here is your answer. Scrolling. Laurel will host its traditional Thanksgiving Day program Thursday, November 25th, featuring the return of the popular family-sized pie giveaway with the purchase of a racing program while supplies last.
Of all the oddball traditions in racing, that's a good one. It's got to be right up there.
That's a classic, and we'll also have to do tomorrow. We're going to talk about Churchill for next week with Kevin Kirstein next, but we also have to do a fairgrounds kickoff as well, because another of racing's outstanding Thanksgiving traditions, fairgrounds, including their dining room, which is a big deal, Thanksgiving at the fairground. So we'll do some of that tomorrow as well. All right, Joe, I appreciate it. And let's get to one of the key elements of your visit. Wrapped up on Sunday at Charleston, the 2021 steeplechase season. And some titles were decided. And your brother and River D instrumental in getting Jack Fisher another training title.
Yeah, it was kind of fun. When the season comes down to the end like that, and there are some title races, usually it's jockey and trainer that people are really paying attention to. It certainly it adds a layer to it for sure. And they came in there, everybody was tied. Leslie Young and Jack Fisher were tied for the training lead, and Graham Waters and Tom Garner were tied for the jockey lead. And Jack Fisher was down to his last two runners. And he took them to Charleston, and they both won. So, he clinched the title in the right way, for sure.
How about on the riding side?
Yeah, and Graham Waters, who rides first call for Jack, he was a board both winner. So, he clinched it with those two wins as well. And Tom Garner was second to him in the last race of the day, so had a chance to tie. Again, it just adds a layer to it. Everybody sort of one more chance to pay attention to it all. And to me, it's pretty fitting. I mean, Jack's won a bunch of titles, so it's not like he needs one or anything. But the year he got inducted into the Hall of Fame to come out with another championship is pretty cool. And again, he sort of came down to, he literally had two runners to take to Charleston, where Leslie Young had, I think she ran five or six over jumps, and Carrie Bryan ran another five or six over jumps, and both horses won. The three-year-old Ghost Lighter won, and then Gostis Bear, the River D horse, won. He actually won first, and then Ghost Lighter was the second horse to win on the day.
That for Bruton Street, and you mentioned Carrie Bryan. She got a win in the apprentice riding training race. You had... I guess Leslie had a wonderful season and had terrific efforts literally from, you know, the opening moments of the season right through Sunday. Terrific season. You also had Lilith Boucher win the maiden hurdle that started the day, and Bill Dowling as well. Gearhead wins the other maiden race. So a bunch of maidens get diplomas, and now they get some time off. We'll watch and see what Kerry Breon does with a return to Ireland, and potentially, you know, what could be in the offing for the Mean Queen and the rest of her group.
Yeah, I was talking to Kerry the other day, and the Mean Queen has turned out on a little farm around the corner from Fair Hill in Pennsylvania, and she spends her morning with a paint mare named Rhonda, and they chase each other around the field. So I think Rhonda's probably about had it with the Mean Queen by now, but she thinks she'll pick her up and, you know, bring her back to Fair Hill in December and start into some light work, and then kind of map it out from there. I think the plan tentatively is one start in Ireland in February and then Cheltenham in March.
I love it. And thanks to, I want to thank Jim Murphy, who sent, like a snapshot from the Laurel website with the details. So I'll retweet that, and no mincemeat, just pumpkin or apple. And by the way,
no mincemeat.
If I'm not mistaken, Wegmans does the baking for the pies. I believe so. They'll be fabulous. That's a great tradition. Got the biggest kick out of that, and people were alarmed when that stopped for a couple of years. So it's great that it's back.
It can't be an easy thing to pull off. I mean, I'll assume. There would be easier things to give away than pies.
They were giving away like 12,000. They would give like 12,000 pies away.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not like a table talk pie, you know, the little individual pie. This isn't like a tasty cake. Right?
Exactly.
It's not a crimpette.
You got to keep them, you got to keep them refrigerated somewhere, and there's a lot of logistics involved. It's not a bobblehead.
Exactly. Well, Joe, I appreciate it. I wanted to get a send off for the steeplechase season, and congratulations to everybody. And it was still not a complete normal season, but things are probably what 80. Probably we're about 80% accomplished, and 2022. Hopefully, no interruptions. No hiccups, nothing to stand in the way.
Yeah, as decimated as the season was last year, you kind of knew that it was going to take a little bit to come back. So to me this year, I kept saying it all year, it's a little bit of a rebuilding year for, you know, trainers had to stock up on horses that maybe they didn't buy the year before when nobody knew what was going on. And, you know, regardless, it takes a little bit of time to make a steeplechaser. The maiden races we had this fall were good signs. They were all pretty full, and hopefully it's a good sign to some, you know, bigger fields next year and more horses. And then the handful of race meets that didn't run this year, and they come back and everybody gets back to their normal date. Like we'll be at the Iroquois in May instead of June, hopefully, and a few other logistics like that.
Right.
It'd be very nice to kind of bring it all back to normal.
And how about, I suppose we should also put a plug in so that people can do some early shopping. When is the thisishorseracing.com calendar able to be ordered?
It is. You can order it now on the website, and it is at the printer, and it'll probably show up on our office doorstep probably Monday or Tuesday after Thanksgiving. So, and then our office turns into packing and shipping and every other madness type thing to get them out the door. But you can order them now online on the website, and we'll have them sitting there. We'll have the order sitting there just waiting for the calendars to get turned around and shipped back out.
Excellent. It's one of the favorites out there. Absolutely fabulous. Are all the pictures, or does Todd do all the pictures? Who else is used from the photography?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a mix, mostly because you can't be everywhere. You know, you try to bring in enough of a cross section of horses. So yeah, Todd Marks has some. Skip Dickstein has a few. Eclipse Sportswire comes in with a bunch, mostly because they have a big network of photographers and can be a lot of places. So try to cover all the bases, and you know, hopefully there's a surprise or two for some people, and make something that they can use all year.
This is horseracing.com. Joe Clancy, Sean Clancy, Tom Law, and we're off next week, so we'll probably talk in 2 weeks to Tom or Sean as we continue to cycle the guys in. And Joe, happy Thanksgiving to you and the extended Clancy clan.
And to you.
Joe Clancy, everybody, and you can follow Joe, of course, on Twitter, as well as by Sean Clancy and Saratoga TL, Tom Law. We'll stay right here, and we've got Tony to come in a little bit, but Kevin Kirstein is going to join us first. It'll be very interesting to see the Kirstein family traditions back in Philly, and we actually, Tina and I, there's a chance, I'm wavering back and forth about going to Philly Saturday, and it might be, you know, birthday and all that, and so, and the Eagles are home against the Saints on Sunday, and I've pointed toward it. I've said, you know, she keeps saying, what do you want to do for your birthday? I said, well, you know, I wouldn't mind going to Philly and going to the Eagle game. And a little dinner Saturday night. But Thanksgiving next week, I got to go shopping. I got to get organized and all that. So I'm really torn about going down, down to the FA. Saturday. It might be one of those last minute, all right, let's do it, you know, jump in the car at noon and head to Center City. We'll see. And maybe the Kirsteins, maybe the residual Kirstein family that remains in the Delaware Valley, maybe they'll have us over for Thanksgiving. Kevin Kirstein, good morning.
You're always welcome to go over my parents for Thanksgiving. They'd be happy to have you.
I appreciate it. What are the Kirstein? Give us the Kirstein family Thanksgiving traditions.
You know, it's been weird because I haven't been home for Thanksgiving in probably almost a decade because of racing here at Churchill.
Yeah.
So we blow things out around, you know, the Christmas, Hanukkah holidays. So Thanksgiving is sort of one of those, you know, pass-through holidays. Personally, now being married here in Kentucky, my wife ends up going over my in-laws' place down at the lake, and so I end up eating, you know, frozen dinners at home with the dogs. So Thanksgiving really isn't much at the Kirstein household anymore.
Wait a minute, you got the baby though now, and you got although you bring up a fair point, and I have this discussion with Andy too, because, you know, Naira, you know, Aqueduct is running, and it is a racing weekend, and in a lot of cases, you know, it's a big deal. Fairgrounds, same thing. Kickoff, the season kicks off traditionally on Thanksgiving. So you bring up a good point that it has to be sort of incorporated into the activities. Well, what's your favorite? What was your mother's best? What's your favorite thing?
Oh, she makes a killer green bean casserole, and I was never a turkey fan growing up, but I was always, you know, diving into the green bean casserole and rolls and mashed potatoes. I'm a carb kind of guy, so between that stuff and the green bean casserole, I had extra helpings of that, but not so much turkey.
That's interesting, because that was never an item. My mother wouldn't, she would run counter to the, you know, to the cream of mushroom soupy kind of stuff like that. She did have a green bean souffle-ish thing that occasionally, but generally she would just steam up nice green beans with some butter and some slivered almonds. That's what I do. I pretty much keep them clean. Maybe I'll try to make a, and nobody, Tina's never asked, and the kids have never asked for a green bean casserole. Interesting.
I'm sort maybe of the, you know, if I get my vegetables, I like them to be covered in sort of other fatty mixtures, and so that's one way to get my vegetables.
That's funny. All right, you gave me something to think about here, actually. Is this the year I try to do something with the green beans? All right. Thank you. That's good. And what's your pie flavor? Preference to pie flavor?
I'm just a pumpkin pie kind of guy.
Interesting. All right.
Just plain and simple.
All right. Well, you're at some point in these conversations, you're going to say that everybody's coming over to the Kirstein house, and you and the wife are making. So that'll happen somewhere along the way.
One day,
as the family grows. And I'll report back as to whether we're going to Philly or not. I do want to go. And I got seats in the Southwest Terrace there, which has become our favorite. If we're not sitting with Will and Johnny, the Southwest Terrace is our favorite little, it's a terrific little nook, the corner of the end zone. You got that corner perspective. So we'll see. Did you, speaking of the Eagles, because it's impossible not to talk about the Eagles when there's Eagle fans on, do you realize they don't have to go anywhere other than a bus ride to New York twice and Washington? They're home essentially for the next 2.5 months. Nobody has to go anywhere.
And they, really don't have that tough of a schedule to close the season either.
No, third easiest remaining of anybody. 10-7, baby. 10-7. That's my call. What do you think?
I'll be I'm glad that you're cautiously optimistic. I'm not quite as optimistic as you are. It's been a weird year in the NFL overall. I think there's just, so many more teams are equally matched this year than we've seen in recent years, and the Eagles sort of fit into that, mixture in the middle of just an equally, matched team. I don't know if they're the top echelon, but not the bottom echelon either, so they just sandwich themselves in the middle.
Making steady progress weekly. It's very encouraging. The season has progressed very nicely at Churchill, and I wanted to make sure to get you in here because we're off next week, and the last week of the meet, the always terrific Stars of Tomorrow card, starting to look forward to it. Let's kind of get a little bit of an advance, if we can, KK, looking ahead.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, you mentioned the Thanksgiving holiday of, how big it is for so many different families around the country, and it's a huge celebration here in Louisville. Since 1969, Churchill Downs has hosted, Thanksgiving dinners for families. We have an early first post that day of 11:30 a.m. Eastern and serve about 7,000 turkey dinners that day. And so families, you'll see, come out to the track for racing in the morning, and maybe, some will do the turkey dinners for maybe a late lunch, early dinner, and then some will actually just come out here and pregame and then go home and cook turkey dinner. It's a fun day for a lot of families who are getting back together, who are coming in town to celebrate Thanksgiving. And so, that's going on. Plus, closing week itself is, lated with stakes action. 6 stake races close the meet at Churchill Downs. We'll close on actually that Sunday, but Thursday through Saturday going to have 6 stake races. Thursday, the Fall City, which is always a fun race for a $400,000 purse. featuring last year's winner Invutant taking on the accomplished Bonnie South for Brad Cox. That should be a fun race. And then the centerpiece of it all is on Black Friday on Clark Day, $750,000 Clark, Grade 1, Maxfield, Midnight Bourbon, among a host of others. There's still a lot of horses that are trying to figure out if they're going to stay here in Kentucky, go to New York, or vice versa. Todd Pletcher is going to have a couple, I think, that'll ship down. Happy Saver, Dr. Post among them. Maybe going to have King Fury as well for Kenny McPeak. So it'll be a fun race for the Clark on that Friday. And then Saturday, the Stars of Tomorrow card, as you mentioned, that's produced more than 50 Grade 1 winners in the past. And it was started back in the early 2000s by then Racing Secretary Doug Bradar and his team. And it's just grown to be now a two-part. We open with the Stars of Tomorrow card on opening day of the meet, which is all two-year-old races, and then that closing Saturday is all two-year-old races as well, headlined by the $400,000 Kentucky Jockey Club and $400,000 Goldenrod. Both of those races are points races on the road to the Kentucky Derby, offering the top four, 10, 4, 2, 1 points, respectively. Also have two new sprint stakes this year that day, including my favorite name, the Lively Shively, the three-quarter sprint race for two-year-olds. That should be pretty fun, and the Fern Creek as well. So fun day of racing, and that Stars Tomorrow card always produces some horses that you want to mark down and keep track of over the wintertime because they could be some Derby and Oaks potentials there.
Well, the Lively Shively, I think will ultimately get a nickname, the Couch Burner.
I mean, if Joe Johnson isn't on one with Lively Shively, on the Lively Shively, I'll be disappointed. Now, it's a fun race name, and the people around the community here where Shively is just a neighborhood away from the Churchill Downs neighborhood, and so it'll be a fun race, cool name that it's named after. We've sort of gone that direction. There's a lot of races that we've named after the communities and the neighborhoods here in the Louisville metro area, and so that's one of them, along with the Fern Creek, so there'll be some interesting fields shaping up for there. There's the racing office is still trying to, you know, dot their I's and cross their T's of which ones are actually going to be in those sprint races. But you're going to have some horses that maybe, you know, tried running in the Iroquois or the Pocahontas back in September that are going to cut back in distance. I think of Matarea maybe for Brad Cox could end up in there. And so, you know, those races will be fun. And you know, develop those horses. Maybe they'll stretch out again in the future, or maybe they'll, you know, keep it that one turn distance.
Is it when you got me thinking about Shively? There's if I don't go to Derry Castle, or if Derry Castle, if they're lined up out into the street, not the Eastern Parkway. There's a little ice cream stand that's very good in Shively, and I want to say Derry Dell. Derry Dell, I think, right?
So you're thinking, I think it's Germantown. So it's right on the edge of Germantown.
All right.
Shively's known for the best Krispy Kreme in the city in Shively.
Interesting. Better than because I go to the one, you know, on Bardstown to bring, you know, when I'm bringing donuts up to the clocker stand.
I've always had I've had good experiences at the one on Bardstown Road, but the one in Shively, they have a good White Castle too in Shively.
Interesting. All right, because I don't go to the one on Bardstown for good service. I mean, it's like we want to kill yourself. drive you nuts how slow they are. But you know, you're always in a rush. You know, you would think being the first person in the door at 5:30, I mean, they wouldn't, you know, but oh my God. And then they go to the trough there, the where the donuts come up out of the oil and get glazed and they take the straw and you know, one, two, and it's like, oh my God.
Now you're making me hungry for donuts.
Too funny. Well, you know, the Clark, I know that we're not, I don't see how anybody in there necessarily affects any, you know, any voting, but certainly, you know, certainly a very good late season assembly of, you know, some of the top, at this point, you know, remaining handicap horses.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Maxfield and Midnight Bourbon, who both bypassed going to the Breeders' Cup and have pointed for the Clark and have both been based here at Churchill. They're not going to run into Nixco, who I just saw about 3 minutes ago jog by me on the racetrack, so he's back out on the racetrack for Brad Cox. So they're not going to run into a Nixco there, but these two horses, are deserved headliners of this race. And Midnight Bourbon, who's sort of danced in a lot of those three-year-old dances this year and, you know, has come up a little bit short, I think this is a great spot for him to get a grade one. And then Maxfield, too, for Brendan Walsh, who, he won a two-year-old grade one back in the Breeders' Futurity a couple of years ago. So he's trying to get that, you know, grade one victory before he closes out his racing career and heads off to stud over at Godolphin. And so, you know, these two horses, very accomplished in their own right. And I think they'll, you know, these two are definitely the ones to beat in the Clark. But there's going to be, you know, some other horses that'll ship in. Like, you know, Todd Pletcher nominated a few horses, and I think he's going with just Dr. Post and Happy Saver. And, you know, there's King Fury for Kenny McPeak. And, you know, Independence Hall is still based at Churchill Downs. He, you know, was an impressive winner of the Fayette last time out. Still not sure what the team at Winstar and trainer Michael McCarthy are going to do with him, if he'll end up running here in the Clark or going up to New York for the Cigar, but he'll work here on Saturday. And, he was very impressive last time out at Keeneland. So, you know, it's a solid competitive group of older horses. And, you know, again, not maybe any, you know, season-ending awards on the line, but very accomplished horses that are going to be in this year's Clark.
Well, and just looking to see at Equibase, at the Jockey Club, there we go, the Jockey Club noms, and there's five. Yeah, and for those of you know, for those that that aren't aware of this, I mention this every so often. One nice resource, not just to anticipate stakes fields, but at this time of year, if you go to Equibase and look at the stakes knobs, like for the two-year-old races, and you'll get, in this case, you got five pages of PPs of two-year-olds, and you go through them, and there might be horses that, you know, you just haven't seen yet that broke their maiden and maybe at Ellis and been away and are getting ready to come back and getting ready for their three-year-old years. The terrific resource, and I print them out very often and have them, you know, until February when the Triple Crown nomination comes out and you get, you know, the 450 two-year-olds all in one place to get a handle on. It's a good way. You go, you know, go get the Remsen nominations as well, and you know, they give you both the nom list and the PPs. So, just looking at this, and actually, it does remind you right away of a few horses that that have either won at the meet or other parts of the country too, Kevin. That considered, you know, coming to visit. Nice. All right. This should be...
Yeah, that race, you know, you mentioned two-year-old PPs, too. Just want to throw in there quickly with the Jockey Club, who, Dale Romans is Howling Time, who won the Street Sense, will probably be the likely favorite in that race. But you're also going to have the first pool of the Kentucky Derby Future Wager next week, which opens on Thanksgiving on Thursday, and that'll run Thursday through Sunday. And so the first pool of that field... We'll be releasing early next week. We'll meet over the weekend, our committee, and decide the field of interest for this year's Kentucky Derby Future Wager Pool 1 and also the Sire Future Wager, which is the lone pool this year. We'll run Thursday through Sunday as well, so you can, you know, sort of take a look at the horses individually listed in the field for the Future Wager, and then, you know, maybe can end up getting a little bit of a better price on their sires, actually, where you're going to get more horses for their progeny. So that'll take place next week as part of closing week at the meet.
A terrific suggestion about the future wager. And you know, going through, you go through this list and you see, you know, here's a connect, McLean's Music, Not This Time, Hard Spun. There's certain ones you're just going to know immediately, but look for some early winners, some horses that have that have already established a toehold, at least you know, particularly if it's, you know, going to be a first crop, and you want to try to find somebody that, you know, that's got a couple of early runners that, you know, that could be value. I'm going through the rest of this. It's actually, I tell you, you know who there's more of than I would have expected. There's as many as, I think, three Cairo Princes, Kev.
Yeah, it's, you know, sires like that who you don't really, you know, aren't the hot names right now, like the Gun Runners or the Tappets or the Not This Times. Then you see horses that are by Cairo Prince who have, you know, won early and been precocious and have stamped their names as, you know, early contenders for next year's Kentucky Derby. And so things like that are ways to, you know, maybe find some value in that field. It's pari-mutuel, so unlike the pools that you can go maybe in Las Vegas that, you know, if any books in Vegas are offering those prices out there, you know, this is pari-mutuel, and so you're wagering against everyone else too. So you maybe get some better odds that you could get from those Vegas pools. Plus, looking at that sire wager is, you know, maybe some value with the horses there that are individually listed.
Well, John Ed Anthony and Brad Cox have got Vivar by Cairo Prince. Robbie Medina has one of Coach Parcells' runners that's a Cairo Prince, Play Action Pass, who had tried the turf. And, you know, he's actually, it feels like a horse that is okay. He broke the maiden at Ellis on the turf and ran well at Kentucky Downs in the race behind Tis the Bomb, and then also in the Bourbon. He was seventh, but he was only beaten four lengths, and then he came back to the dirt on Halloween at Churchill. And so we'll see what if he goes forward. And then I think there was a third. That's two Cairo Princes, and I thought I saw a third one. Maybe that was just the connect. Okay, so just two Cairo Princes. But even that, you know, the fact that there's multiple Cairo Princes in this nomination list for the Kentucky Jockey Club, that's what, you know, that's the idea. A couple of things before we go, Kev. Some thoughts about what we've seen here so far, last couple of weeks at the meet.
I'll tell you what, it's been, you know, fun racing at the meet for lots of purse money. The purse money is just out of this world.
Crazy.
And,
yeah.
It's been, the racing has just been ultra competitive. And so when we close things out here in the final week, and it's going to be with these stakes races that are these six stakes events that we have later on in the meet, plus all the 2-year-olds that are just laden over this backside right now. It's going to be some fun racing to close out the meet. I expect to be, you know, some fuller fields that we'll see for closing week. And, you know, a lot of these trainers are wanting to get some of this purse money before they ship out of town. And I think we're going to see that. You know, the dirt racing has been, you know, interesting, just dirt only, obviously, with the turf course not being ready until next year's Kentucky Derby week. And so lots of turf horses have tried the dirt, maybe have been successful, maybe not successful. But it's been the racing up and down has been competitive. We have a, you know, a pretty decent carryover right now in the Derby City 6 jackpot, which is just over $90,000. That'll be a mandatory payout on closing day. You know, the pick 5's a 15% takeout. It's good wagering events, and, you know, get that bankroll ready for that Stars of Tomorrow 2 program on that closing Saturday, where you can have lots of those competitive 2-year-old races, and I think we'll see a couple of stars that day.
Now, just looking at some recent maiden winners as well, and kind of numbers that they've produced. Amos had that higher standard. Actually, I was watching the Fox show when higher standard went off. 76 buyer in that 5.5 furlong maiden win. He had a nice, there was a nice Rosario winner of the early on that card. I think it was in on Saturday. You had that heady allowance group, South Bend, right?
For Bill Mott. I'll tell you what, another guy who's sort of not getting maybe the press that he deserves is Lynn Cash, who has been very active in the claim box here in Kentucky. He claimed Sir Alfred James a couple of starts ago for, I think, 62.5, and that horse won a very competitive allowance event yesterday. And he also has Beverly Park in his barn, who's won 8 races in a row, including winning an allowance race last out. And that horse could be entered on Sunday. I think he's going to enter today for Sunday to to run a conditioned allowance event. So he's been active in the claim box, active in the races, and his horses have been running very well here at the meet.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned him, and that Beverly Park came up. I think with Marty last week. In fact, you know who I brought up with Neil Pessin on Monday or Tuesday, whenever Neil was on, that Happy American.
That horse was a great bet that day.
Yeah. 7-1, almost 8-1, and also I mentioned it in passing last week, and I didn't get a chance to reach out to have Chris Hartman. Obviously, Breeders' Cup, towers over everything. But Necker Island and Mucho and that Sir Alfred James put on a nice show in that bet on Sunshine last Saturday.
It sure was. That was a fun race, and Chris Hartman has been ultra hot at the meet, and he and Mitchell Merle have teamed up for several winners. And you know, for a guy that's winning as many races as he does at the meet, the ROI is just out of this world. And, you know, people just sort of seem to think that maybe the horse is a little overmatched in the spots. But, man, he and Mitch have been on fire, even back in the September meet and into the spring, too. So they've had a great year. Keep an eye on him on closing week because his horses seem to go off a little bit higher than I think they deserve.
Kevin Kirstein, quite a bit of good racing yet to come, and Tyler Gaffalione with that big six-win day, and Rosario came back and won, three or four the next day, and racing has been compelling, and it'll finish strong with the stakes action, and two-year-olds, the always important stars of tomorrow. Two card, I'm glad you focused on the first round of Derby futures as well, and the Sire future. Happy Thanksgiving, and thanks. Terrific chance to get set, and we'll be doing some recapping when we get back in 10 days.
I appreciate you having us on, and happy Thanksgiving to you and the family. And, you know, if you're in the Philadelphia area, don't hesitate. I can always get you over to the Kirstein household to get some Thanksgiving goods.
I love it. Kevin Kirstein, Horse Racing KK, everybody, at Churchill. And you can see, it looks like they got you doing some of the on-air punditry, and they're keeping you busy.
I'm retired again from the on-air work. That was a Kentucky basketball player, one and done. Had to fill in for that race, and I have a face for radio, as you know, Steve.
Kevin Kirstein, everybody. Thanks, KK.
Take care.
Kevin Kirstein, a lot of fun. Tony Black is going to join us, and we'll take Tony to the bottom of the hour when Pat McKenna swings in. And Tony, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I didn't wind up listening earlier this morning because my son had a late started school today. They didn't start school till 10 o'clock, and I had to run some kids and him to get breakfast and go to school late. So I'm kind of in the dark about what you've been talking about.
Yeah, well, it's winding down before Thanksgiving break. I'm off next week, and we're having some Thanksgiving appreciation, and just touching on on any racing stuff. We talked earlier with Joe Clancy and brought up the Laurel with the big pie giveaway that they've been doing for decades. Just having some fun this morning.
Well, you know, Thanksgiving kind of brings back some memories when it comes to my history in riding. I believe it was 1974, Thanksgiving Day, and that year Keystone opened. I believe 74, it opened earlier that year. But Thanksgiving Day, I think, was the first day I rode at Keystone Racetrack because I was riding in Maryland steady. And I think I rode a horse named Highfleet Richard and Soldier Bill. I believe Richards won, and that was a horse that Ed Payne, who had was a close friend of Jack Vanberg's, he had a string of Shinrum farm horses in Maryland. And it was just before we decided to ship up here with Vanberg shipping a whole string of Shinrum horses to Keystone. But before we shipped up, we ran a couple horses at Keystone, and that was Ed Payne's horse. And then a guy named Richie Zimmer, who was had a history of being assistant trainer for Alan Jurgens, ran a horse called Soldier Bill. And he got left at the gate and finished second. I believe it was Thanksgiving Day, 1974. And here I can't remember what I ate for dinner last night.
Well, it, you know, Thanksgiving... I mean, listen, racing historically, other than Christmas Day, and there have been venues that have run on Christmas. You know, Calder ran on Christmas for a long time.
Right.
I think Tropical Park did as well. But it's you know, the fairgrounds for Thanksgiving is a big deal. I mean, there's certain holidays that you know that are just. Famous. I mean, Arlington Father's Day was, you know, forever was an important race card. You know, there's you know, holidays and racing were, you know, a natural.
Yeah, and I believe in those days, Thanksgiving Day, and you got to remember, we were racing 6 days a week at most racetracks. And Thanksgiving Day, the only thing they might change would be post time, and the tracks that did race Thanksgiving Day, I think their post times would be like 10 o'clock because they would want to get over early so people could enjoy their Thanksgiving festivities. But I believe it was a 10 o'clock post Thanksgiving Day. And you're right, there wasn't many tracks. Florida raced on Christmas Day, but a lot of the tracks, you know, they either took advantage of the holiday and changed their post time to accommodate the holiday, or maybe they didn't race on a holiday, but it was interesting to see how everything's transitioned, especially when you're racing 3 and 4 days a week, and that's about all they're racing at some of these racetracks, and it brings back memories. We used to race 6 days a week, and then they got Sunday racing, and we raced like 5 days a week. Monday and Thursday might be dark, but we race 5 days a week, and there'd be a track within an hour driving distance that would either be night racing or a race on those dark days. Racing used to be day and night and 7 days a week in some areas.
Yeah. In fact, somebody there was some handle and you know, purse account comparisons I saw the other day, and it I don't know how productive it is to you know compare you know this era of racing to things from you know 10 years ago even let alone you know 20. You just you know you don't have the horse population simply, and so. You know, the consolidation and the dates, et cetera, that you know, have been compressed to, you know, essentially match up as best they can with, you know, the horse flesh that's available.
Yeah, and, you know, you have to understand, like, I came around in the 60s and 70s and raced, you know, for 40-some years as an everyday rider. But I can remember coming around, and the way I might talk of what I remember, it isn't so much criticism, it's just what I remember. Because I can also remember in the 60s and 70s when there would be an old-timer come up and he would say, that ain't the way it was in the 40s. Boy, we didn't do it that way in 50. Or we didn't do it that way in 58. And I'm thinking, I don't want to turn into one of those guys, oh, we didn't do that way in 70 or 68. But that's generally the way people look at things at times. I just look at it as what my experience has given me the opportunity to be part of the transition that racing has gone through. And I don't really want to be the person that criticizes it because racing is a great sport. And you know what? The economics of the sport dictate a lot, and the horse population dictates a lot of what racetracks can do. You know, I can remember when... They started racing in New York, and in I think it was like 72 or 1 or 3 or I forget what year it was, the earliest opening ever at Aqueduct Racetrack was March 1st for opening. You know, and they would close sometime after Thanksgiving, too, and didn't race till March 1st. And that was the earliest opening ever, you know, and that was a big deal. Oh, it was might have been in 70 or 71. It must have been 71 because I still had the bug. And I went up there with Charlie Coco. He had a string of horses at Belmont, and we were racing at Aqueduct. And he had leased my contract out, and he says, well, when they open at Aqueduct, just be up here March 1st for opening day at Aqueduct. And that's where I rode till Garden State opened sometime in April that year. So racing, you know, the dates have changed. And, of course, like we were saying, the economics of the sport and the horse population and the dates that these racetracks can run. They might race year-round, but they're racing 3 and 4 days a week because can't race 6 days a week year-round. But it's a great sport, and I've been lucky enough to be part of it for a lot of years, even though to some degree right now I have other interests. And I'm a little bit out of the loop, even though I do keep active and go over to parks and get on horses. And I'll be getting on horses again when the weather breaks, and because of this hernia operation that I'm getting over. It's really healed up good, and I'm ready to go back to work in another 2 or 3 weeks. But the weather's not going to be what I want to go back to work and get on horses. But come April, I'll be out there.
Well, that gets us then, Tony, to the Thanksgiving portion, and we do have a complaint. Sally Ellen at Country Life Farm, you promised her that chestnut stuffing recipe.
I gotta get that off my mother. You know, she told me the other day, Mom just said, you didn't go get the turkey yet. I said, we got a week, over a week. I'll get it today or tomorrow. But yeah, I got to give you that chestnut stuffing recipe, whatever else Mom puts in it, because sometimes I'd rather eat the stuffing than the turkey.
Well, that's Tina. Tina's the same way. She the stuffing is her absolute number one favorite, and it's because it's my mother's that I make, and Tina just, and she had it. My mother made it for, you know, when Tina, my mother was alive, and that hooked her, and so I'm following up and carrying on. So. Ours is sausage, mushroom, you know, classic. I've added a few things. I add, it's the one time a year I reach for those awful dried cranberries, the craisins. I throw some in there. I'm not a believer in the dried cranberry. They have that outrageous claim on their bags now that says you know, preferred to raisins. Maybe on a planet somewhere they're preferred to raisin. How anybody would prefer a dried cranberry to a raisin? It's insulting to raisins.
Yeah, and how about if you don't like raisins or cranberries? Well, you know, there's nothing wrong with you. It's just you just don't like that dried kind of fruit. You know, I like apricots, but I don't like raisins. and like you say, if you don't like raisins, you ain't going to jump in and love cranberries, dried cranberries. But I do like dried apricots. I don't know. Maybe that's the Greek coming out of me.
No, I love dried fruit in general, but I like an apricot.
Yeah, I absolutely do. Like candy. I just, I'd rather pick on the apricots and stuff like that. But I'll get you that recipe.
All right, get me that recipe so that I wanted Sally Ellen.
It's probably basic of just every other stuffing, you know, with the sausage and whatever else and the breadcrumbs and who knows what. I know, don't believe it has any kind of mushroom or anything in it, but the chestnuts, it really gives it a good flavor. I'll see if I get that off of Mom today, because I know she's bugging me to go to the store and go get some stuff for her. And she's, like I said, I'm lucky. See, she's 96. She's still here cooking. In fact, she's giving me lessons in cooking, where we cook some Greek meals, where I can carry on her recipes like pastitsa, you know, things like that. And
love it.
I can carry on.
What Greek items make their way on? I've asked you this before. What Greek stuff comes on the Thanksgiving table?
Well, you know, we always we like spanakopita. Do you like spanakopita?
I love
spanakopita.
Love it.
She takes the phyllo, which is a real pressed out dough. It's paper thin, and she'll stuff it with the make the pie. The spanakopita or the turopita. The turopita is like a cheese. Instead of spinach,
right.
You put the same thing with the filo, but it's cheese. It's a special cheese makeup that she does. The spanakopita and turopita. And then for the dessert, and she didn't make them. She isn't going to make them this year, but she brought some home from the Greek church the other day. Gala tuburiko. It's the filo with the custard inside. So it's a dessert custard, and
nice.
Baklava. Of course, everybody knows what baklava is.
Sure.
But my favorite is the gala tuburiko. It's a custard, milk custard.
Sure.
You've got to love that stuff. You know, I had relatives. Well, they weren't really blood relatives, but they had in Astoria, they had a Greek pastry shop. And my father was the godfather to one of their daughters. And I used to watch them. We'd go there and visit them. And I'd watch them make the filo dough on a 4x8 table. They would roll this big ball of dough out and press it and roll it until it was paper thin, and then it would dry, and then they would cut it into sheets. So, gotta love filo. It's something that all the Greeks like using, filo dough.
Well, and when it comes to spanakopita, that's one of my absolute favorites. I've tried to, these days you can buy, sheet filo in the grocery stores, and it's tough to work with. Boy, it dries out fast. You got to keep it buttered and you got the melted butter, and you got to keep it real soft and pliable. So. But it's fun, and we got a few things. I got to get there. We keep talking about coming to town and you treating me to a little Greek specialty. So we got to slip that in.
We definitely will do that. We'll get you here and give you some of Mom's genuine Greek cooking.
There we go.
She's 96 and she's going strong. You wouldn't believe it. She reminds me of all the things I forget to do every day. She's 96 and she's got a better memory than me. So.
That's wonderful. It's just wonderful. Tony, for you and Kylie and the kids and everybody, happy Thanksgiving, and we'll talk in 2 weeks.
Hey, you too, Steve. Talking 2 weeks. Happy Thanksgiving, you, Tina, everybody. And keep up the good work, and I love you, brother. You take care, and thanks for all you do.
Tony, thank you, buddy. Love you. And Tony Black, folks, another season winding down here, and Thanksgiving, one of our favorite traditions on the show. Let's take a break. The only one of the morning, Pat McKenna is going to join us, and Pat will address... The concept that was floated yesterday by two state senators, one in the Assembly and one in the Senate from downstate, trying to interrupt the agreement between the state of New York and the New York Racing Association when it comes to the shared revenues of the VLTs, the machines at Aqueduct. And we'll also talk about the Islanders and the UBS Arena at Belmont Park, which gets introduced to concert goers and Islander fans. As Steve Summers used to say, right? The Islanders. Overnight and under the covers. God, was he great. Right? Steve Summers, the overnight guy on FAN. Schmoozing sports. Back after this, 90 and 90 to come. A little later, Rich Eng and Neil Kleinberg, Clinton Street Baking Company, will close out this week before Thanksgiving edition with our annual Kitchen Confidential Turkey Saver. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them, is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 384643.
Sirius XM Sports presents